This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you, Sabrina, for the news. My name is Rich Bradbury. This, of course, is Enterprise BizBytes. I'm joined in the studio today by
Audrey Raj
and Christine Wong.
So, stories lined up for you today, guys. If you listened earlier on, we said we're going to be starting off with a story about seven women who have made Forbes' richest self-made women list for the first time ever, including almost billionaire Kylie Jenner. That's our story number one. Story number two, all that advice to find your passion isn't just cliche, it could be actively bad. Mm-hmm. Story number three, how to reset a bad work day.
I think this could be useful.
It could be useful
on a Monday.
On a Monday, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Story number four, open offices are as bad as they seem, and apparently they reduce face-to-face time by up to 70%. And as usual, on a Monday, story number five, we'll be giving you some events that we think you might want to check out later on in the week. Okay, let's start with this Forbes story then. So it is how Forbes have released their annual ranking of America's richest self-made women. And there are seven newcomers to the list, four of whom have built all or part of their fortunes in the beauty business. Mm. Forbes say these are Instagram-savvy makeup moguls, and specifically almost billionaire Kylie Jenner, have ushered in a new model of extreme fame leverage that is radically reshaping business, culture, and politics. So the list measures the wealth of the top 60 richest women in the U.S. Who built their fortunes without the help of an inheritance. Mm. Together, they're worth $71 billion, $9.5 billion more than the combined wealth of the 2017 list. Interesting list. Taylor Swift rounds it up at number 60. But there's Anastasia Soir, who's in at $1 billion. Her source of wealth is cosmetics, of course, for Anastasia Beverly Hills. Kylie Jenner in at $900 million. Mm. Source of wealth, cosmetics from Kylie Cosmetics. Moving on, we have Huda Katan at $550 million, cosmetics from Huda Beauty. Teresia Gao, who's in at $500 million, venture capital for Aspect Ventures. Next, we have Anne Wojcicki. Is that right?
Wojcicki.
$440 million from DNA testing. 23andMe, something we've talked about
yes,
a few times.
Yes.
Kim Kardashian West. I can't believe I'm talking about the Kardashians, but here we go. she's in at $350 million, you know, obviously from reality TV, mobile gaming, cosmetics. Three times less than her younger sister, though.
Yeah.
Kylie is what? Just 21, I believe?
Yep. 20,
in fact. Okay. And then moving on, Teresa Tucker, $380 million from Enterprise Software. Now, it's not just this list that we're talking about. It's the idea of being self-made,
yes,
right? So people are asking this question already. You know, does somebody like Kylie Jenner deserve to be called self-made? I mean, arguably, she is going to be the youngest self-made billionaire ever.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of people saying, and there's an awful lot of online discussion right now as to whether or not Kylie Jenner is, in fact, self-made.
Yeah, I think the whole premise behind being self-made, I think people expect to hear a rags-to-riches story.
Right.
So with Kylie, they want to know, at which point was there a rags
ever any
part
ranks
to her story, right?
Yeah, mm. Yeah.
Yeah, we have a message in on WhatsApp from Jeremy Leong who just asked, you know, but like, how do you define self-made? Because everyone gets something from their parents to make it, you know, in business. So where is the line of self-made drawn?
Interesting question, because Forbes have actually this year, for whatever reason, and I'm assuming it's because they knew that something like this was going to happen, they've developed a scoring list, a set of scores, where they start at 1 and it goes all the way up to 10. So somebody who scores a 10 is somebody who is entirely self-made, who not only grew up poor, but also overcame significant obstacles. So you look at somebody like Oprah Winfrey.
Yeah.
On the other end of the scale, you look at number 1, somebody who inherited fortune, but is not working to increase it. So we could talk about Laureen Powell Jobs, Steve Jobs' wife,
okay,
who also works with Emerson Collective. In at number 5, somebody who inherited a small or a medium-sized business and made it into a 10-digit fortune, Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And in at number 7 is where Kylie Jenner sits. So number 7, 7 points means she's self-made, who got a head start from wealthy parents and a moneyed background. Another example would be Rupert Murdoch.
Right.
So according to Forbes, that is their criteria for somebody who is arguably self-made.
Yeah. So, okay, a lot of people have been arguing on the basis that Kylie Jenner did not start from nothing. She was born into extreme wealth and instant fame, quote unquote. This is from an article of Teen Vogue that I'm kind of quoting now. But some people have defended her by saying, just because she did have that background, you know, she actually still, you know, created her own business with Kylie Cosmetics. And that is where the self-made thing comes in, because she could have just not done anything. Someone on WhatsApp as well, this is coming from Warren, who just says, props to Kylie for not messing things up, being in the position she's in. But then also, in a weird kind of twist of events, says, remember Paris Hilton? She was in a similar beneficial position, but she has not, while she's gained pop culture popularity, it has not translated into her being recognized as a business person. To which I'd just like to point out that Paris Hilton has been very quietly running 19 different product lines, and has had over $2.5 billion in sales. It's not to the extent that Kylie Jenner has had success, but she's been doing stuff. But the point is that, you know, basically, should we judge Kylie Jenner on her current business that she did, to be fair, have the idea for herself and has created all of her products herself? And, you know, looking at the way that she does talk about her products, it's clear she's very proud of them. So there's that.
I mean, it just raises that question, which is going to go round and around and around in a circle, is whether or not she would be in a position to open up her own business were she not somebody who is, you know, inherently wealthy.
Yeah.
Right?
But you've got to give her props, like Warren just said, because, you know, for a 20-year-old, or, you know, when she started this, she was like, what, 18, right? When she started Kylie Cosmetics, right? And it's only been around for about 2 years. She made the right choices in putting her name onto the right products.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And then having been able to market that via social media or using her sisters or herself. So she did some good there. So she's, definitely contributed to the company's success and to making it into an almost $1 billion. I mean, she's almost worth $1 billion today, right?
Yeah, $900 million so far. Right?
And here's just a little kind of plot twist as well. Someone actually set up a GoFundMe, and I don't know how sarcastic this GoFundMe is, but it's let's get Kylie Jenner to $1 billion. And it was created on July 11th, actually. And it's basically getting people to donate to Kylie Jenner to get her to $1 billion. I don't think she has anything to do with this GoFundMe, but people are actually donating. It's actually raised almost $2,000 of the $1 million goal. So I mean, does that contribute to that? Does that count as part of the self-made thing? Or like, how much of her notoriety has contributed to her success?
Well, okay, let's open up the questions then to people who are listening at home. Does somebody like Kylie Jenner still deserve to be called self-made? I think that's the question we're going to go with. Yeah. Let us know. 018-789-8899 on WhatsApp, or you can get us on Twitter at BFM Radio. 018-789-8899. Does somebody like Kylie Jenner deserve to be called self-made? According to the Forbes Rich List, yes, she does. Okay, moving on to story number two, whilst we wait for some responses for that. All that advice to find your passion isn't just cliche, it could be actively bad. This is one of those things that, you know, people have told me this time and time and time again, and I've thought about chasing down and going down the rabbit hole and doing all of that kind of stuff. You're telling me this is all bunkum?
It depends on how you kind of approach things. So a new paper in the journal Psychological Science essentially says that if you think that interests are innate, you may be less intrigued by new topics than if you think that interests are developed.
I see.
It's more about if you kind of are fixed in this sense of I have a singular passion and I'm only going to pursue that, you might be closing yourself off to other things that could also help.
Right.
So this comes from psychologist Carol Dweck, who is one of the authors of the study. And she suggests that a growth mindset, which is believing that you can get smarter or better at something, is generally preferable over a fixed mindset, which is believing that intelligence and ability are innate. So in the context of interests or passions, a fixed theory means that you believe your passions are innate and you discover them. But a growth theory means that you develop passion over the course of your lifetime. So the way that they did these studies was essentially they had college students to indicate whether or not they were more interested in the kind of STEM fields or the arts and humanities. Then they indicated how much they agreed with statements such as you can be exposed to new things, but your core interests won't really change. Then they read articles that did and didn't correspond to their field of interest. So Students who displayed a stronger fixed theory, as in they felt that they could only kind of have one core interest, showed less interest in the articles if it didn't match their field of interest. Mm. And a follow-up study suggested that having a strong fixed theory actually caused them to be less interested in topics outside their field. So it's basically like having a fixed theory and having a core passion isn't necessarily a bad thing. You know, focusing so intently on one skill means sometimes you have to sacrifice the ability to work on others, but it could be detrimental when it leads you to close yourself off to new interests or to give up when the area that interests you proves too difficult.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's no really neat solution to this idea, but the point of it is that I think finding your passion and focusing on one thing specifically, it's not necessarily bad, but you have to be really careful to make sure that in the process of finding your passion and pursuing it, you're not closing yourself off to other opportunities that are out there for you, and that you are still open to trying new things and developing those as potential passions as well.
So I think like this could is not really the case for younger people, just because, you know, they're open to many things, they're willing to try things at least once before they realize, okay, I like this or I don't like this, I see a future in this, this interests me, this does not interest me, and so I'm not going to go anywhere near that. But people who are older, you know, you tend to have a preference towards what you enjoy. Maybe you enjoy football, maybe you enjoy baseball, maybe you enjoy reading over watching football or something like that. Mm-hmm. And that's because, you know, maybe you didn't have a fixed mindset over closing yourself off to a certain interest, but it's just over the years you just learned that you're just not interested in certain things. So I guess it comes, I'm questioning the study and at what age. They did it with college students, right?
Yeah. I'm also of the opinion as well that once you've, okay, let's take football as an example, you know, well done, France. You know, you've tried football. Let's say you're not playing it, obviously you're spectating, you know, you're watching it on TV. You've tried a few times and you've decided over the years that it's just not for you. You know, you don't enjoy it. A lot of people do, whatever. And I think the older that you get, the more kind of, the more you stay away from it, the more you try to avoid it.
You just know, okay, this is not my thing. I'm just not going to try it. I'm not going to.
Absolutely,
Even sit and watch a match with my wife, just even though she enjoys it, because
it just becomes a little bit more repulsive.
It's not me. But it's different with, like, say, a passion for, say, Japanese food or like sushi, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so some people really enjoy it, but others are just like, no, it's raw. I'm not even going to try it. So that's where you have a closed mindset.
So I think when they say fixed kind of mindset or interest, it's more about the fact that you're closing yourself off to even trying that new thing at all. You're like, let's say you're just like, no, but I only like doing arts things, so I can't ever try a sports thing ever because I'm an arts person and that's who I am and that's all I'm going to do. So I think that is where they're coming from, where that kind of mindset can be a bit detrimental to you finding different things to work on.
And if you're interested in all this talk about mindset and how to grow your fixed mindset into a growth mindset, you can definitely do that at any age. Just go look up some of our podcasts on Raise Your Game and also on Resource Center. We've done a whole bunch of shows on mindsets that can help you improve. You know where to find them? BFM.my, or better yet, just get our app. Everyone should have the BFM app. It's so much easier. Let the podcast come to you.
Look at that. Well done. Nicely done. Okay, it's time for us to wrap up for this segment, of course. But we are coming back, moving on to story number three about how you can reset a bad work day. Don't forget, we started off today's show with a story about how we had seven women who've made Forbes' richest self-made women list for the first time, including the almost billionaire Kylie Jenner. Our question today is whether or not somebody like Kylie Jenner should be considered self-made. Do you agree? Do you disagree? What are your points on that? Get in touch via WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or on Twitter at BFM Radio. It's time for a short break. Some music coming up from the Foo Fighters with Times Like These on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Best flipping moments. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. I'm Rich Bradbury in the studio with
Christine Wong
and Audrey Raj.
Starting off today's show with a story about seven women who have made Forbes' richest self-made women list for the first time, including the almost billionaire Kylie Jenner. I'm going to stop referring to her as that, just Kylie Jenner. She's worth $100 million. She comes in 27 on the Forbes rich list. We've been asking you, you know, what kind of, whether or not she deserves to be called self-made. And I suppose that definition of self-made differs from person to person. According to Forbes, they've listed it out as, excuse me, as between 1 and 10. So somebody who is at a number, has 1 point, is somebody who has inherited a fortune but is not working to increase it. At the other end of the scale, at number 10, is somebody who is entirely self-made, who not only grew up poor but also overcame significant obstacles. Oprah Winfrey is somebody who springs to mind there. Now, my own personal opinion of somebody who is self-made is number 10. You know, somebody who has had nothing and has worked from nothing with no safety net to make a fortune. You know, and for me, that is somebody who's really worked hard at it. A lot of these entrepreneurs that we talk to and we interview and we've spoken about have a safety net, do they not?
Yes, yes. Because, you know, with that safety net, it allows them to take risks as and when they like. And also, you know, your definition of self-made rich is very close to what dictionary.com says, because dictionary.com says that self-made means having succeeded in life unaided.
Right.
And that's pretty much it.
Okay, so first of all, we have a message in from one Jawad, who says, perhaps Kylie Jenner deserves to be labeled self-made, but we just need to adjust our expectation as to how much value we should place on the term self-made. Mm. And they think that Forbes' method of breaking it down by points is a good way of just kind of understanding the contribution of your background to the level of success you achieve. And for me, on a kind of personal level, like, I'm very aware that I come from a relatively privileged background. I'm not like the richest person in the world, but I'm also not poor. Like, and so my main thing is also, you know, can you really have a good chance of achieving success if you don't have things like a good education and a good background and a good, you know, good support system, that kind of thing? And it's very, and as you've said, Rich, it's very difficult to start from nothing. Mm. And we should reward people who do. But the likelihood makes sense of you being more successful if you have access to resources that people who are unaided don't. So yeah, I don't really know about this, really. I'm very torn.
Okay, so we're going to keep with the question. 018-789-8899. You know, what is your definition then of being self-made? How would you define somebody who is self-made? Does it differ to what Forbes are telling us we should be following? Just let us know. 018-789-8899, or get us on Twitter at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.